This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Thursday, February the 4th. I'm Angela Dunning. Petersburg is hoping for legislative help to boost the size of state land entitlement that comes with the formation of a new municipality. A local committee is recommending the borough seek all of the unspoken-for state land within Petersburg's boundaries. Joe Vicknicki reports.
The land entitlement is an incentive that the state provides for forming a new municipality. The state has told Petersburg its entitlement is 1,300 acres of the more than 18,000 available. Petersburg's timing on forming a borough has impacted how much the municipality can select. It can only choose from the state land in the borough that hasn't already been designated for another use. Land grants to the university, Alaska Mental Health Trust, and Southeast State Forest have trimmed the pool of available land and also have decreased the percent of that remaining land that Petersburg can choose. Municipal Land Selection Committee member Dave Kensinger thought the state has limited what Petersburg can pick.
You know, most of the merchantable land, you know, something you right. could either log or, you know, like make a property development out, has either been given the mental health or the university. Mm-hmm. And so basically what we got left, as we can see when we're going through this process, isn't that much of a valued land.
The committee has already gone through the available parcels and compiled a list of its top recommendations if it's stuck choosing only the 1,300 acres. The committee used a selection criteria that focused on land that could be economic development parcels like rock pits, boat ramps, and a mothballed ferry terminal at the southern end of Mitkoff Island. Chair Rick Braun said the most valuable land is accessible by both land and water.
Like you got highway access, beach access.
Right.
That's the most valuable. And closest to town, of course, is the very most valuable. And as you get away from town, it's going to be less. As you don't have road access, it's less. If you don't have beach access, it continues to be less and less and less.
Right.
And most of what we got is that of the latter.
While it's ready to recommend a list for 1,300 acres, the committee agreed to seek more than that amount. That could require legislation to increase Petersburg's entitlement. 14 of the 18 boroughs in the state have gone that route. One of the most recent and closest to home is Wrangell. Initially granted just under 2,000 acres, that borough eventually was awarded 9,000 acres in a bill pushed through the legislature in 2010 by Wrangell Republican Peggy Wilson. Committee members agreed to seek the entire 18,000 acres of vacant, unappropriated, and unreserved state land within the borough. Kensinger thought Petersburg had a chance asking for the legislation that didn't cost the state money, given Alaska's budget crisis. He also thought the borough could make some simple arguments.
We're just asking for what every other borough, when they became a borough, got in the state. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not asking for a whole lot. We're not asking for more. You know, we just don't. You know, just because we're at the end of the process.
Committee Chair Rick Braun agreed, bringing up the possible reduction or elimination to state revenue sharing, a payment to municipalities.
Each community has to be more self-sufficient, mm-hmm. has to develop their economies as best they can, and this is the best way for the state to help them do it.
Committee members identified other parcels that it would recommend the borough acquire if that amount is increased, along with specific reasons for needing those parcels. The request will go along with Petersburg's mayor and two borough assembly members as they visit Juneau to meet with legislators later this month. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
The Petersburg Borough Assembly Monday discussed items they wanted to bring up with the state legislators in an upcoming trip to Juneau. Here's more on that. Three assembly members are traveling to Alaska's capital city this month. Mayor Mark Jensen, Vice Mayor Cindy Lagadakis, and Assemblyman Bob Lynn. At the meeting, the assembly came up with seven issues for them to bring up during their trip: local harbors, land selection, Petersburg Cake Access Road funding allocation, KFSK funding, support for the ferry system, community's jail contract funding, and the condition of medical facilities in the region. The borough has been anticipating a potential reduction in state funding for jail operations. Chief of Police Kelly Swihart told the assembly that operating money was still up in the air.
We're hearing some positive inklings, but it's still very much up in the air. I know the Chiefs of Police Association is getting ready to draft a letter with some funding suggestions, and they're gathering all the information from across the state to put that letter together, so any support we can get there would be appreciated.
The Assembly has been keeping its eyes on $37 million in state money for the Cake Access Road project. After 4 years, the project is still in the planning phase. If that money should get reappropriated, Petersburg would like to keep some of it close to home. Assemblyman Kurt Wohlheuter.
We have two harbor projects, the Papke's Landing Dock and the Kuprinoff Dock, that need to be completely overhauled at the tune of about $1.2 million apiece. So $2.5 million towards those.
The state has expressed interest in transferring those two state-owned facilities and another remote one to Petersburg. The Assembly knows the probability of getting capital projects funded is not likely with the state's budget situation. But Wohlheuter was hopeful that if the Cake Road money was reconsidered by the state, that some could also go to the borough's number one priority, renovating the police station and municipal building.
If this municipal building falls into the criteria of energy savings or energy cost savings, if we could get $3 million for that, I'd like to have a resolution that says that we do have a plan for, you know, $5.5 million if it's going to disappear from our district to go someplace else.
Assemblywoman Cindy Lagadakis spoke on two regional issues of concern: cuts to the ferry system and the inadequate medical facilities in the region.
How we are going to address that and fund that, especially in view of reduced transportation options out of our community in the upcoming years.
As for KFSK, the state is proposing a 27% budget cut for the next fiscal year. That follows a cut of 18% last year. Besides addressing it on the Juno trip, the Assembly also unanimously passed a resolution that asks the legislature to consider less severe cuts to the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. Alaskans get their first chance tonight to tell legislators what they think of the centerpiece of Governor Bill Walker's fiscal plan for the state. The Senate State Affairs Committee will begin hearing public testimony at 5:30 p.m. on Senate Bill 128. It would direct $3.3 billion annually in Alaska Permanent Fund earnings and other state funds to the state budget. It also would change the source of annual dividends from the Permanent Fund to oil royalties. The bill requires dividends to be at least $1,000 this year. Dividends could be lower amounts in the future. An aide says the committee has received more than 100 emails on the subject. The 5th Annual Innovation Summit begins Monday at Juno Centennial Hall. It's a business symposium that attracts 200 to 250 people from around the state, though most are from Juno. They discuss commerce and hear experts in a variety of related fields. Brian Holst is Executive Director of the Juno Economic Development Council, which is putting on the event.
The Innovation Summit really is an intense day and a half opportunity to immerse yourselves in some lead thinking around how do we address these issues that we're dealing with and how do we advance our regional local economy.
Holst says state budget cuts and the Juno Walmart closure mean it's a good time to consider the area's economic future. One speaker is Michael Schumann, an expert on local economic development. Another is Karen Pittman, who focuses on youth investment. Holst says a new program added to this year's summit is an entrepreneur pitch breakfast.
We've invited four entrepreneurs that have ongoing businesses that are sort of near the beginning of their lives as businesses. They're going to pitch their ideas to a live audience, and then the audience is going to select by voting which is the most compelling business opportunity.
The winner receives a cash reward. The Innovation Summit begins at 1 p.m. Monday and continues through Tuesday evening at Juno's Centennial Hall. The World Health Organization declared Zika virus a global health emergency this week. Experts believe there is a strong link between the virus and a serious birth defect, but the risk to most Alaskans is low. KTNA's Philip Manning has this report.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as many as 80% of people who are infected by the Zika virus will show no outward symptoms. Those who do may suffer from fever, headache, rash, and joint pain. The most serious potential impact of the disease is a strongly suspected link between Zika and the birth defect microcephaly. Louisa Castrodale, an epidemiologist with the state, says that link is not certain at this point.
There's a lot of work that's being done to figure out what's going on with that, and if it's a, you know, how strong of an association it is, and if there are other things that are associated or, you know, related to what that defect that is being seen that could cause it.
Microcephaly is a condition where a baby's head is much smaller than normal. According to the CDC, that can lead to a less developed brain. A large number of microcephaly cases, especially in Brazil, prompted the World Health Organization to declare Zika a global health emergency. Zika virus is primarily transmitted by two mosquito species of the Aedes genus. The species also carry diseases like dengue and yellow fever. Fortunately for Alaskans, neither of those species lives in the state.
We're quite blessed in Alaska. We don't have any pathogens of humans that are transmitted by mosquitoes.
That's Derek Sykes, Associate Professor of Entomology at the University of Alaska. He says Alaska's subarctic and arctic climates are simply too harsh for Zika carriers. While some of Alaska's 34 species of mosquito are related to the Aedes aegypti, Sykes believes it's unlikely that the virus could find viable hosts here.
There's lots of mosquito species down there, even close relatives to Aedes aegypti, and they're not transmitting the virus. So the virus seems to be very host-specific.
Derek Sykes says factors like climate change are also not likely to bring Zika-carrying mosquitoes to Alaska anytime soon.
I mean, we're talking centuries, probably.
The primary risk for Alaskans is travel. Louisa Castrodale says Alaskans who plan to go to tropical or subtropical climates should take precautions against mosquitoes to prevent not only Zika, but a variety of diseases.
For sure, there are areas of the world where there are not only Zika virus infections that are likely or possible, but other kinds of diseases that could be acquired from mosquitoes, you know, malaria, dengue, chikungunya, things like that.
Castrodale says the CDC has a list of measures that can be taken to avoid mosquito bites in affected areas, including wearing clothes that cover the skin, insect repellent, and air conditioning. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
Governor Bill Walker's administration is requesting an additional $65.5 million in spending for the current fiscal year. The supplemental request released yesterday includes $47.5 million for costs related to the wildland firefighting season. Alaska had its second largest fire season in terms of acreage burned in 2015. The budget request includes funding to address increased caseloads at the Office of Public Advocacy and cover medical costs and staffing needs at juvenile justice centers. It also seeks funds for emergency repairs for failing water lines at the Anvil Mountain Correctional Center and for the Aklutin Overpass. This is on top of supplemental items previously requested, including $35.3 million for the Community Revenue Sharing Fund. The administration also has proposed the use of pension obligation bonds. And members of the State House of Representatives yesterday passed a bill designed to strengthen the state's military code of justice. It passed on a 39-0 vote, with one member absent, and it now goes to the state Senate. Representative Gabrielle Ledoux says the revisions create a state code which is similar to the federal code. The code would apply to military members in Alaska not covered by federal regulations, such as many members of the Alaska National Guard. The approval in the House comes 17 months after a scathing report on Alaska's National Guard highlighted substantial issues with favoritism, misconduct, and a lack of confidence in the organization. Ledoux, who is a Republican representing Anchorage, says the state's National Guard needed a way to punish misconduct within its ranks. The revisions will allow the organization to maintain good order and discipline. And this wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening. Coming up on KFSK, I will have the weather forecast and community calendar. Then Chris Lopez will be in for Street Beat. At 2:35 this afternoon, KFSK's Sideline Sports. At 2:40, it's High Country with Steve Barry. At 4 p.m., NPR's All Things Considered. Another local news update at 4:30. At 5 o'clock, It's Alaska News Nightly today, and then we will go to live basketball. 5:30, it's Vikings versus Haynes Glacier Bears. Then at 7 p.m., Hodgepodge, tribute to Ruth Sandvik and Alice Longworth with Neil Sandvik. At 9 p.m. tonight, Lady Vikings versus Haynes Lady Glacier Bears. Then at 10 o'clock, it's Radio Free Petersburg with Chris Weiss, a Mardi Gras New Orleans music special. At midnight, the BBC World Service broadcast live from London.